It's my pleasure today to be in Solihull Square with Don Crim. Don Crim is a visitor. Well, he's not a visitor, actually. He owns the place here. He's more than a visitor. He has roots in Solihull. Don, welcome to Boat Radio.
Thank you, Shirley. Pleasure to be here.
Now, I know that you're here for a concert, and so therefore we can start perhaps with the singing part of your life. Tell us about your acting and your singing and where you are with that right now.
Well, I've been singing all my life and acting for a long time. My background actually is as an actor. My training is with a BA in a bachelor's in theater, and I actually had not done a lot of theater until fairly recently in quite a long time. And I'm doing that now in Mexico quite a bit, but that's a different story. Singing has been ongoing for a good 10-15 years now, including a good portion of that here in Sawyer and in Mallorca. I'm a countertenor, and I'll be doing a concert October 30th at Escolapies here in Sawyer, 8 o'clock, with Suzanne Bradbury, who I've had the pleasure to work with many times here, and even recorded a CD. And actually, this concert will have Mahler's Rückert Lieder, which we recorded in 2009 in La Iglesia San Felipe Neri in Palma. So we'll be doing that, and we'll be doing excerpts from Berlioz's La Nuit d'Été, and some other German songs and English songs, and I don't even remember. I'm not even sure we know the whole program because we haven't had a chance to rehearse yet.
But last time I saw you, you were singing spirituals. Not usually the place for the countertenor voice.
Correct. Last time I was here, which was in, I think I left here in November 2014, 2 years ago. I had just done two concerts with Mallorquin fabulous jazz pianist Agustin Aguiló, who lives in Palma, and we had done a concert at the Petite Sala at the Opera House of mostly American song. And so in that concert there was no classical music, maybe one piece, but we did jazz, we did spirituals, we did other sort of typical traditional American songbook songs, some film music, and then it was so popular we did it again here in Sawyer just before I left. And in that concert, I was using more of my vocal range than I would typically use in a classical concert as a countertenor, because as a countertenor, I'm mostly up in the stratosphere vocally, and I was using a lot more of my lower register that you hear when I'm speaking in that particular concert. I have been continuing to develop that repertoire and do more and more of that. The concerts that I've recently done in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, including one just 2.5 weeks ago, was about two-thirds classical, and then one-third was, in fact, spirituals, working with a different pianist, not Agustin, but a different pianist, Ken Bichel, actually, in Mexico. This concert, I might do something a cappella, but that's spirituals, jazz, are not Suzanne Bradbury's forte or vernacular, piano-wise. And unless Agustin happens to come in and we just do some, comes into Sawyer for the concert and we whip something up, I think that repertoire, a concert of that repertoire, is going to wait till the spring. And I will be meeting with Agustin, and I will be planning a concert for next spring, early summer, with him. But we'll have to wait to see how that develops.
So for this visit, we get a concert in a week or so's time, and then you're coming back to do the spring concerts then, are you? You already planned that journey?
That journey's already planned, and I absolutely intend to do a concert with Agustin. He may not know that yet, but he does know that we're talking about it.
So countertenors sing very high, yes?
Yes, our vocal range is that of a male alto or a mezzo-soprano. Is where our tessitura is. I shouldn't say range, but that's where our tessitura is. It's very, it's basically that that vocal range, and our tessitura is there, as opposed to, okay, I can sing a falsetto, but I'm basically a baritone. I mean, those are different.
But that is the point, really, with you. This is where you're different, because you did sing as a baritone, and you, it was only in training you discovered you had a higher voice, if I remember right.
I was never a baritone comfortably. I mean, I sang in my lower register, somewhere in between a baritone and a tenor, but I was never comfortable there. It was only as I developed my instrument that I found where I was really comfortable. Even when I was singing lower down, and this was not classical music, this was popular music, or say, jazz or something, I was always interpolating the music up an octave as soon as I had a chance. So I knew intuitively that I belonged higher. I just didn't have the training and the development of the instrument to do it.
And that's now been accomplished. You're on a journey now. Then you're.
Oh yeah.
Tell us about the rest of your the places that you perform, because you were very connected with Austria. I remember. Is that?
I had a coach at the Mozarteum in Salzburg, and I was doing some concerts there, and I was teaching acting to Grace Bunbury's opera students. This is now a couple of years back, because she's no longer teaching, and that was in over the summer in Berlin, and I did a concert at her in Berlin as well when I was there last. And I've sung in Turkey, and I've sung in Italy, and I've sung in Finland and different places. Lately, until the very end of 2015, I basically did nothing. I was in the States, I was dealing with some family business, and I really did nothing. And then I moved down. I started the process of moving down to Mexico, and I did this concert in San Miguel de Allende. And then I've moved there. And since I've moved there, I've been nonstop doing straight theater, which was a complete surprise to me. I was cast in a musical, and I was cast in a part written for a baritone. And I said to them, "But I'm a countertenor." And they said, "Oh well, we'd be stupid not to just, you know, rewrite the music for you." So I went in sort of expecting that the whole thing is going to be rewritten for a countertenor, but as a practical matter, it just didn't work. And so I started using my lower voice a lot more. And that's been a really, really interesting challenge. And so actually, if you heard me sing now in my lower register, you'd probably be surprised, because it's really developed considerably more, and even off mic, which it had not. But I've been doing all this straight theater. I just finished the 39 steps in San Miguel de Allende. Mm. So I got my thrill of playing 25 different parts and sexes and different British and Scottish dialects. And that was after doing Bullshot Crummond, where I was also doing all these dialects. That was a bit of a trip. And I did a radio broadcast, actually, of the Caine Mutiny. I played Captain Queeg. So that was kind of a trip. And I'm doing two more plays as soon as I get back. I'm doing a very interesting play, a one-man show, and I'll be actually spending all my time here in November memorizing my lines, because I have to go back and go immediately into rehearsals for a play called The Tricky Part, which, if that goes well, since it's a one-man show, I might consider coming and doing here, because I don't need anything but a, you know, black box, basically. The Tricky Part is based on a memoir by an actor who grew up in a very conservative Catholic home in Denver, Colorado, and was sexually abused, seduced, molested by a camp counselor at age 12 in a relationship that went on until he was 15. And what's interesting, I think the subtitle of the book, it's called The Tricky Part, and it's something, the subtitle is something like A Boy's Story of Abuse and a Man's Journey Towards Grace. And it's really about his process over the course of his adult life of coming to terms with what happened to him and with his participation. And that's his perception, how he, a part of him actually wanted it and embraced it and went back for it. And it was a mentor who did the seduction. So it's not so black and white for him. And he then wrote a one-man play about it that I got cast in. So That's going to be very interesting to do. It would be interesting to do here. I have to really decide where is something to do. But it's going to be kind of interesting to do in San Miguel de Allende as well. And then I do a Canadian thriller. I'll be back before midnight, and I have other projects going on. There's someone's asking me to do a whole review of Noel Coward music and some plays. I don't know what he's going to put it together as a pastiche. A journalist, actually, who is also running a San Miguel de Allende radio podcast show, and he's looking for material to go on it. And he's a music entrepreneur of sorts. And now,
this name, San Miguel de Allende. Tell us about this. This sounds like the center of the arts in Mexico, is it?
San Miguel de Allende has a lot in common with Dea and Sawyer, the Sawyer Valley. It is now probably the second major cultural center of Mexico after Mexico City. It was a community that was virtually abandoned until the 1940s or 50s and started to be patriated by American artists and to a lesser extent Canadian. But there was, because it's in the state of Guanajuato, and Guanajuato is where Diego Rivera is from. So there was some potent artistic vibe that was going on in the state of Guanajuato, obviously, because Diego Rivera is from there. And he and some of his students and friends were doing some art in Guanajuato, as well as some murals, and there started to develop this artist colony of combined expats, as well as, at that time, very leftist artists in Mexico, of course, just as was happening in Mexico City, with Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera and even Siqueiros and Tamayo. So, little by little, this organic, cosmopolitan, cross-cultural vibes started developing in San Miguel de Allende. It is a gorgeous colonial town. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site. It has a central plaza jardín with a magnificent parroquia church. It's 170,000 people. And the state of Guanajuato is very vibrant economically. It's now one of the centers of auto production in Mexico, which is a big part of the Mexican economy now, is manufacturing, including automobiles. It's not just oil, it's not just drug cartels. And San Miguel de Allende has had a 30-year international music festival. It's had a 20-year smaller-scale festival called Pro Musica. It has a opera festival and competition now, dedicated completely to young Mexican opera singers, that was founded by John Bills and Sherry Alexander. John Bills is a retired choral member from the Metropolitan Opera. He sang 5,000 performances at the Met in the choir and probably doing in the chorus and doing small roles as a tenor. It's 30 years of something called play readers, where there's a fixed audience for 30 years in San Miguel de Allende of people coming to readings of plays where the actors have had 3 days to rehearse and they mount a semi-stage production and they're still on book and they're reading. Plus there's a new theater and there's about 10 full productions a year. The visual arts, the plastic arts are very similar in, I would say, level to what goes on in Sawyer, and there's an intrinsic local population of artists as well as an intrinsic expat community of artists who are doing stuff. So it's we picked another place closer to the US to make our base, because we actually did sell our home in Los Angeles, that has enormously the same appeals as the Sawyer Valley for us.
So the Sawyer Valley took you and created your interest here how many years ago? What was the story that brought you to Sawyer in the first place then?
We came here looking in 2006, and we'd been looking for a place to live as expats in Spain for several years, and we'd looked all over Spain. We were actually originally headed towards the Altamura in Catalonia because of the combination of the mountains and the sea. And we came here on vacation, and we took the trolley, the train up to Sawyer, and we fell madly in love with it. And so, and here we had the mountains and the sea all in one place. And at that time, pre-economic crisis, there was a lot of music stuff and a vibrancy going on here that now I think is probably recovered a lot, but it, we all know that it took a big hit for some time after 2009. And it got harder for us to stay for, well, we were as Americans, we don't have the ability, without applying for a form of residencia, we don't have the ability to just stay here beyond 3 months at a time, the way Europeans do, obviously. And, you know, truthfully, before 2009, that wasn't, it wasn't so difficult to do if we wanted to. It was pretty easy. To just sort of, everyone just kind of ignored us. We were able to do that. But we, at a certain point, starting around 2010-11, we really couldn't do that anymore. And so we had to withdraw ourselves as a practical matter for, you know, from being here more than 6 months a year in 3 month spurts, which coming from the States is a long, that's a big undertaking, frankly. I don't know if I answered your question. What was the question?
It was just what brought you here. So you had your moment where you got off the train, you thought, this is it.
Yeah, and then George Bush was elected, and we decided we were definitely just going to come here and stay as long as we could, and we did that.
Yeah.
And we were here pretty nonstop over a period of 4 or 5 years, you know. And we did have to go back and out for immigration reasons at any number of times, but we basically were here.
And the experience that you had in Solia with music and pursuing your own interests, did you find everything you wanted in the Solia Valley?
I found everything that I wanted on Mallorca and in Europe, and the Sawyer Valley was a wonderful launch pad. You know, I got introduced to Suzanne Bradbury, who's been now a musical partner for me for years, and I met Mike Watts and was very intrinsically involved in an opera that he was writing that, unfortunately, that never came to fruition, but maybe it will still at some point. And he wrote some other music for me, which was terrific. And from there, I launched and came to the attention of José María Moreno. I did the Carmina Burana, and through that, I met José María Moreno and was then doing concerts all over the island with him. And that opened some opportunities to do some work elsewhere in Europe as well. So it was a wonderful launch pad for me right at the moment when I was ready to start performing as a countertenor, which I had just dipped my toe into in the States before we came here.
But you had performed other musical genres. I mean, countertenor wasn't your launch, was it?
No. I mean, I had made my living for a long time, you know, playing the guitar and piano and singing in various places. But it had been about a decade that I had stopped singing. I had stopped performing. I had become an Alexander Technique teacher and was happily teaching. And then, quite by accident, as part of my continuing education, I sort of discovered through a voice teacher this classical development potential of my upper register, and then I was studying and I was developing the instrument, and that took a good number of years. And it wasn't really until I came to Sawyer that I was at that moment, because my teacher had been in Spain, which is one reason we were coming to Spain a lot. She was based in Madrid and also in New York, so I was sometimes coming to Spain and studying with her, and sometimes we lived in Barcelona actually for a while, so partly so that I could work with her easily. Living in the same city was too close, but living in Barcelona and flying and having lessons with her in Madrid was great. We love Barcelona. But so this is all part of a progression of our both living abroad and my development as a singer, and this was the place where it really, really solidified.
So on that basis, it's great that you're back to give us another concert next week then. So we're looking forward to that. We are very much looking forward to that. But what happens next? Where's the next concerts going to be after this one here?
Well, I did. First of all, we didn't come back at this time just to do this concert. We came back because after, as I said, a year of sort of family crisis and dealing with stuff, and our selling our home in LA and moving to San Miguel Allende. It's been 2 years since we've been here. So, and I just decided to do this concert because we're here. And then we will be back on a routine basis in the spring every year. And I will continue here to do concerts every spring. The next thing I'm doing artistically, as I said, in February in San Miguel Allende, I do The Tricky Part, which is this one-man play for 2 weeks. I immediately go into rehearsals a week after that for I'll Be Back Before Midnight, which is a Canadian thriller. That goes up in April. Then we come back here, and I don't have a concert scheduled here yet, but I am planning on doing something with Agustín Aguiló, either here in Sawyer or in Palma. I'll be meeting with José María Moreno next week, so I'll find out whether there's some other stuff that I might be doing. I'm contemplating, if The Tricky Part goes well, possibly doing a one-man play here. And then I have 4 or 5 different projects that I'm looking to develop in Mexico, not just in San Miguel de Allende, but elsewhere in Mexico and possibly elsewhere in Latin America, that I'm looking to develop, and I'll see what's transportable from those, and always be looking for opportunities to do them here when we come in the spring, if it works.
And this is just fascinating that you've picked out the places that really work for you artistically. But where did you start from? Where were you born?
I was born in New York, and I went to school in California, college in California, and so, early on, my singing and acting developed in New York, just through school, and then that continued to develop in school in California, and then I stayed living in California pretty much after school the whole time.
Yeah. And so you've gone down the coast then, and ended up in Mexico.
Right.
With your European diversion to Sawyer. Where else in the world would you be other than Sawyer?
Exactly. And San Miguel de Allende, by the way, it's in the state of Guanajuato, which is very central Mexico. It's basically due south of Chicago. So it's not on the coast. It's in the mountains. It's at 2,000 meters, which is wonderful. It has this idyllic climate as well.
Does it snow?
It snows on the mountains, and there's a hard frost maybe 5 days of the 5 nights
of the year.
But the rest of the time it's very moderate and temperate during the day. It's a different climate from Sawyer in that it's drier.
Yeah.
But it's not as dry as Los Angeles. I mean, people think of Los Angeles as, I don't know what they think, but it's basically a desert on the coast. So it's quite dry. And the down season in San Miguel de Allende, and the hot season, the really hot, dry weather, is in the spring, which is the perfect time to be here, of course. Not the only perfect time to be in Sawyer. I would love to be in Sawyer every February for the, after the Calmas de Enero and for the almond blossoms blooming. But that's also ultra high season for music and theater and whatnot in San Miguel de Allende. So we're just, we've just moved there. We have a rhythm.
Yeah.
I will tell you a fascinating little bit of how is it possible that this happened. We think about Sawyer and all the small town magic that happens in Sawyer. Well, a lot of the same thing happens in San Miguel de Allende. And when we were looking at our house that we ultimately bought in San Miguel de Allende, which is not a Mexican-style house. It's actually a magnificent Moroccan/Syrian riad. And it's very beautiful house. And we're walking through the house, and David, my husband, and I were talking to each other, we have to buy this house. And we walk into the living room, and I turn around, and there's this floor-to-ceiling mirror. And in front of the mirror is a concrete column, and on top of the column is a sculptural bust head dressed in Afghani garb that is made by Elena Castillo, who lives in Sawyer and has for years and is our closest friend in Sawyer, who's a Russian artist.
Yeah.
And there it is in the middle of San Miguel de Allende. It's like, are we kidding? It was like this is just not possible. And it turns out that the woman who built our house in San Miguel Allende lived in Saudi Arabia for 30 years and ran a business of African, of assembling and selling African and Middle Eastern art. So she's a very cultured and educated woman. And Elena Castillo, who lives here, but also lives in Moscow and runs the most important art gallery in Moscow, and also lives in Saudi Arabia because her husband is an American Tejano who has been consulting and doing work in Saudi Arabia for years as an information technology specialist. They were living there at the same time. So there's my direct tie-in between our closest friend here in Sawyer and the artistic community and San Miguel de Allende and our home there.
Well, that's really weird. Did you recognize the piece as
being
hers?
Instantly. I went to the owner of this house and I said, "You know Elena Castillo?" She said, "No, I don't." I said, "But you have her piece in your house, your art." And I described the sculpture and showed her the picture. And she said, "Oh, no, that's made by a Russian artist." I said, "Yes, yes, Elena Yazykova Castillo." And then as it turns out, she, you know, and then of course she recognized immediately, and I took a photograph of the owner of the house, and I had taken a picture of David, my husband, hugging this bust of Elena's, and I sent an email with a photo attachment to Elena Castillo. "Look what we found." And she just could not believe it. And when I sent her the photo of Jan, this woman who had owned the house, and she remembered, oh yes, she ran this beautiful, gorgeous shop of artisan crafts in Riyadh. You know, it was unbelievable. Unbelievable.
So did they leave that piece for you in the house?
Oh, I wish they had. We have a piece of Elena's, and we had just started to commission a piece of Elena's for our house in LA, and Elena was working on it, but we put a stop to that, and now Elena knows that I want her to come and stay with us for a month in San Miguel de Allende and get local clay and make use of a communal kiln and make us a piece. That would be fabulous.
Wow. And in the meantime, what happens here in your house in Sawyer? So you do you have a different view of how you live in terms of houses here than in Mexico? I mean, is it a traditional village house you live in here?
We have a traditional village townhouse here. In San Miguel de Allende, we live in the campo. So it's well out 20 minutes outside of the center of San Miguel de Allende, in the Colonia of Atotinilco, which is administered by San Miguel de Allende, but it's its own thing. You consider it like Fornalux, the equivalent, okay, administered by the Ayuntamiento de Sawyer. Atotinilco is administered by San Miguel de Allende, but it's its own historical entity. Which also has a remarkable pilgrimage site. The Santuario de Atotinilco is one of the holiest sites in all of Mexico, and it's painted. It is the Sistine Chapel of Mexico. It's these magnificent Baroque murals, and it's a pilgrimage site for literally hundreds of thousands of Mexicans annually come to Atotinilco. We live a good couple of kilometers away from the center of that as well, but it adds a certain... We have so many things that are similar in terms of a plaza with fireworks going off and all that joie de vivre that all of Spain, and especially Sawyer, has. And we get a lot of that same feel. And of course, we are bilingual, and so it's natural for us to, you know, to be living as expats in places that are Spanish as well. The style of living is, some things are very similar, you know, houses that leak, you know, and some things are different, as I said, because we don't live in the campo here, we live in town. So that's quite different.
So you've managed to find a balance then. You can't live here all the time because you're American. So you're going to be, in the future, you're going to be here for chunks of the year and back in Mexico for chunks of the year. And we're delighted because it's always great to see you.
Thank you.
And it's certainly always great to listen to you and to watch you now, maybe soon in one of the plays. But in the meantime, I look forward to your concert next week. And thank you very much for talking to Boat Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
Our aim at Street Invest is to put a trustworthy adult into the lives of street children so that they can support them in creating the most positive paths for their lives in the future. We work around the world, working on the street with the children where they are. For such a large group of children, the amount of funding available is tiny. Really, the funding that keeps organisations like Street Invest going comes from individual donors. Street children are the most abused, neglected, violated children, yet they're also the most resourceful, responsive and resilient children that we could have the honour of working with.
For more information or to make a donation, visit streetinvest.org.